our time to fix her. But thank you for having me here, and does everyone have a worksheet? This is what we're going to be using this morning. Hopefully you've had some time to look over that already. I know that was sent out earlier, or was intended to be sent out to everyone as much as possible earlier. So, in the interest of time, by the way, how much time do I have? Mary, when's the class?
Oh, sorry, 20 after.
Okay. So in the interest of time, I do want you to respond, but I just ask that your answers be relevant and brief. So we're sticking to the topic, and please, no long story time, okay? We can talk about stories afterwards. And, but for right now, we'll stick to this, all right? So consider this our script, if you will, for this class. I'd like to read Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it. The gate is small, and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." So our first question here says, what does Jesus actually define when he talks about a wide gate or way and a narrow one? What's he actually talking about? And this is where you do not be shy, okay? You can say something. Because it's really awkward when I ask a question and then answer them too. Okay, yes sir.
It would be his way and the world's way.
Okay, you can say it, but his way and the world's way? Yes ma'am. Okay, an entrance into God's kingdom versus a failure to enter into the kingdom. We could say that, or simply holding on to a different kingdom that's going to certainly disappoint. Okay, anyone else? Yes?
One is to find life, and the other to destruction.
Okay, so and he actually says that in so many words, that there's a way to life, life with God, because that's the only way that exists. And then there's the way to the destruction of one's soul, which in this context would mean then that would be a separation from God, a permanent separation from God. So we're on the same page here. We need to define these terms. And the second part of that, part question 1A says, are there really only two gates or paths for so many billions of people? We have, 7 billion people on the planet. And not to mention however many billions have lived up until now, and Jesus says, there's only two ways. How in the world can that be?
There's his way, and that's all.
Okay, there's his way, and then there's everything else. Would you agree? Is that fair? Is that an accurate representation? Go ahead.
If you believe in God, he says he cannot lie. He's telling you that there's only one way.
Okay. Not only is he telling you, but one thing that needs to come out, not in this class, we just don't have time, but there's also evidence for all of that. God has provided the proof, the evidence that there really is only one God and there's only one way. When that God of authority speaks, then he speaks through that evidence, with that evidence, through those proofs, so that he can establish that that is a truth and not God's opinion, because God doesn't have any opinions. So just think about that. There really are only two gates or paths. Doesn't matter how many billions of people, even if we had trillions of people, there would still only be two ways. There would be a way that leads to God, and there would be another way that leads away from God. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. We don't have to define all the other ways in order to know that they're leading in the opposite direction from where God is taking them. Yeah.
If you look at the crossing of the Red Sea, it was only one way that God said was safe, they people wanted to go the other way. They wanted to go back to Egypt.
That's right. Or somewhere else. And just they could, right? And that's how people are today. Would you agree? People are like that today. They want to choose their own way, and that comes out in this handout, as you'll see. So, let's get to that. Part B. What if someone wishes to excuse himself from both paths? Can he make his own?
No, because God said there was only one way. If you choose a different path, you're obviously not going God's way, so.
Yeah, but what if they're really, really sincere about it?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, we'll talk about that. All right, that's coming up. You've seen that. All right, and it's just a problem today that we're confronting. Have you confronted it in yourself? In other words, have you had to deal with this? Have you tried to choose a different way? I think if you're honest with yourself, all of us have tried to choose a different way, because that's when we sinned, that's when we became sinners, that's when we realize later on that we chose way in order to now choose Christ. Okay? So it's not just people out there, it's even us. We try the different path. We tried our own way, we tried our own method, and we realized, thankfully, it didn't work. Not everyone's there yet. We want people to be there, but they're just not all there yet. Who did I skip over here? Anyone? Alright. So you can't make your own way. Well, let's clarify that. Actually, you can make your own way, but it just won't work. Let's say it that way. You can choose a different way, call it your own, put your name on it, customize it, all you want to, you know, put all the whatever bells and whistles and decorations you want on that way, and think that you're going down that way and that you're being successful. It's just that, and here's the sticking point right here. When you die, the mask of deception and delusion gets ripped off, and you see that there really was only two ways, and you chose the wrong one. I mean, that's what Jesus is saying here. And that's what I want to keep to, is that this is a message not from the Church of Christ, it's not from me, it's not from preachers, it's from the Master himself. This is what he says, and he's got the authority, and he's got the proofs to back it up. That's pretty impressive when you start thinking about it in that light. Question 1C says, who is responsible for whichever path is taken?
You know.
So we are, each of us? So the church is responsible then for which path you take?
No.
Okay, not that us, right? No. Just clarifying, I just want to be sure. We're all talking about the same thing here, right? So who's responsible for Chad's decision to take whichever way Chad takes?
Chad.
I am, right? So you just learned my name, and that's how we do that. Okay? So, and you are responsible for your decision, for your path that you take, whether it's for God or make for God, you are responsible. Why am I bringing this question up?
Because we like to shift responsibility to anyone else.
Not only like it, we love it. We love to shift responsibility. Whenever we can, we love to shift that responsibility to anyone or something else that is nearby that we can point a finger to and blame them. Do people do this today?
Yes.
It would be easier to say, do people not do this today? Because there's only like, well, there's no one. We all do that, okay? So, you know, everyone does this at some point or another. Remember back in the garden, God said, Adam, what have you done? Well, the woman did. And the woman, what have you done? Well, the serpent did. Right? I mean, we've been pointing fingers ever since. We've been always looking for the scapegoat. And what God is telling us, what Jesus is telling us, is that you get to choose. And isn't there a great freedom in that? That you get to choose. Someone isn't forcing you. They're not compelling you. Say you grew up in a non- godly, unchristian home, and yet you get to choose. You don't have to go that route. Or say you grew up in a godly home, and you want to be a rebel and a fighter and resist all authority. You can do that if you want to. You get to choose. Great liberty, great freedom. But with freedom comes responsibility. And with responsibility comes, in a negative sense, consequence. In a positive sense, reward. That's really what Jesus is saying. It's a great way to sum up, if you think about it, this Sermon on the Mount. Alright, well let's go to question 2. It says, what makes the wide path also the path of least resistance? And there are a number of answers to that, certainly. What makes the wide path the path of least resistance? Well, let's define what the path of least resistance is, right? You've all seen water, right? When it comes down an outside, or it comes down a window, or it just comes down from the sky and starts channeling whatever it does, what does it do? What route does it take? The path of least resistance. When electricity is zapping through something, what path does it take? Path of least resistance. We've got nature to tell us, to show us, to illustrate to us how things work in the natural world. Human nature is not really any different. When left to ourselves, what do? We take the path of least resistance. So, the path of least resistance then would be a path that is, and here's where we start defining it. It is, help me out.
Easy.
It's easy. Why did you pick that? Because that was the first thing on my mind too, right? What's another thing you could say about path of least resistance?
Everybody's doing it.
Popular. Right? And that's what a lot of people want today. They want the most popular thing. What do young people want in particular?
They want to be popular.
Right? They want to be accepted. What does the wide path offer? Acceptance. fellowship is a generic word which simply talks about, you know, you're in a group of other people who are basically doing the same thing you are. That's fellowship. Have the same goals that you have. That's fellowship. Keep in mind, everyone on the Y path has the same goal. They want to live life on, here's another one, their own terms. And that's what the Y path offers, is you can live your life on your own terms. Let's say, and this is going to sound blasphemous as I put it this way, especially in this context, right? You don't have to listen to God. You don't have to study your Bible, or you can read it, or you can believe it. You don't even have to believe that it is the Word of God. You don't have to listen to Jesus. You don't have to think about your soul. You can just live life however you want to, do what you want to do, find your happiness, however you want to define it, however you want to describe it, however you want to live it. Let's face it, God is allowing you to do all of that. And most of the world is doing exactly that. And what does Jesus say about most of the world? It's not going toward God, it's going to its own destruction. Wide is the path, and many are those who find it. We're living in a time of unprecedented, freedom from, or restraint, freedom from restraint, or freedom from laws, freedom from all kinds of authority, or at least that's what people think. And we're seeing all kinds of people looking for opportunity to live life on their own terms. This is not a conceptual thing. We're seeing it in action. And maybe some of us are even grappling with that ourselves.
He allows us to have that freedom because otherwise we'd be puppets. And who wants a puppet? He wants somebody who wants to choose him and do this.
That's right. He wants worshipers who have chosen him to be his God, or their God, I should say, for him to be God. And then to take care of them in that way. And what else?
Also, the person who is, say, has a timid soul, because a lot of these people sound like they have a timid old soul, but they just want to be in common, have everything in common with everyone else. They're not just going with the flow, they're not looking to be popular, they just don't want to stand out. They want to be part of the people.
I agree. There's certainly an element there of timid people that just want to be, that really, as you say, don't want to stand out. But we've got other groups of people that want to stand out, want to be rebels, and want to be identified by a certain culture and so on. But the fact is, even in that, they're really not separating themselves from the white path. There's another element to all this, and that is the white path is extremely, let me use the word accommodating. The white path accommodates anything you want to believe. In fact, it'll believe everything you want to believe. It'll accept it. I always picture someone with a bunch of luggage. You know, like not just a 5-piece version luggage set, but like a 50-piece. You know, like they're hauling around all this luggage with them, and they're looking for a path, if you will. A way of life. A way of belief. A system, I should say it that way. That will accommodate all of that luggage. The white path certainly accommodates. It'll take in anyone and everyone. It doesn't care what you believe. It doesn't care if you don't believe it. It doesn't care. It is completely indifferent to whoever you are and whatever you do and whatever you choose to believe. Would you agree with that? Isn't that what Jesus is describing? This white path. So you need to know what he's saying here, right? And it helps us to understand what a white path is and why it is the path of least resistance. Because if you don't have to conform to a certain criteria, a certain authority, or a certain standard, or a certain system of belief, well then, that's the least resistance you could possibly find. Something that just doesn't have any obstacles or hindrances or anyone telling you no. And that's what our society loves right now. We can't say no, we can't say sin, we can't say wrong. Everyone's trying to say yes, you can. Yes, it is permissible. Yes, you are entitled. Yes, you are free to do whatever you want to. And everyone has to agree with that, otherwise they're the opposition, right? They're the enemy, they're the bad people. And certainly we're being paid for that just because we have standards and convictions in something constant and fixed. So there are several answers to that why path, the least resistance. Question 3 says, which, if any, of the following statements support a wide path mentality, and which, if any, support narrow way thinking or mentality? In either case, how do you know? Let's just look at some of these. Maybe you've heard of these statements before from people. Maybe you've used them yourself. First one, very popular, that's just the way I am. Has anyone ever used that on you?
Our children.
It's not your children, and it's certainly someone else's children. Okay? I mean, that's true. We hear that from them. So, let's look at this just kind of objectively, as much as we're capable of doing. That's just the way I am. Is that a wide path mentality, or is that a narrow way mentality?
Wide.
All right, so you've chosen the wide path. Why?
Just the way I am.
Based on what we just said, how could you further define that? What does the wide path allow you to do?
Choices.
Everything's all about choices, right? I want a path that's going to allow the most number of my choices possible. And this is exactly where this is going, right?
And they're all good choices.
And they're all good choices, yeah, because there can't be any bad ones, because that sounds oppressive and mean and intolerant. So we got to all think the same way. That's what the wide path says. We've all got to accept that there are no hindrances, no obstacles, no one to say no. So when people say that's just the way I am, they're kind of, if you think about it, what they're really implying is that I'm in a fixed state of mind, and there's nothing that you can do or teach me that is going to alter how I am right now or how I live right now. Right? So what they're really saying is, whether genetically or through my conditioning or through my own choices, which you have no right to try to persuade me otherwise, this is how I am right now, and this is how I'm always going to be. And Jesus comes back and says, that's not true. Would you agree with that? Is that what he's saying? Because if you read the whole sermon on the mount, isn't he saying that you do have choices, but there's good choices and there's really bad choices? And you're responsible for either choice. So yeah, you can be that way. You could just say, yeah, this is the way I am, but that's really not going to help you. That's not a good choice. It's not a wise decision. How about someone saying, it's my life and I'll live it however I want? Wide path or narrow path?
Wide.
Why?
Closed mind.
It's up to me to decide.
It's up to you to decide, right? Okay? Go ahead.
Not only up to you, or up to me to decide, but you better not be trying to tell me.
All right.
Because I know what's best for me and you don't.
That's right. I know what's best for me. You don't know me. You can't judge me. Have you ever heard these things before? Maybe you have. I don't know. Maybe you've been living in a cave somewhere, right? For the last 20 years you have not heard them, but this is how people talk. This is how people think, right?
Saw someone over here.
Yeah.
I do want to hear a sermon suggested with the wide path, maybe you take all your stuff with you.
Okay.
And the narrow path doesn't
allow you. That's what I was talking about, that all that luggage, the wide path is accommodating, the narrow path says you need to leave that behind. Now we try, don't we? We try to take as much as we can on the narrow path. And one by one, we have to keep jettisoning, one people luggage at a time. And God's teaching us that. He's telling us that that's not going to work. So that's true. The wide path is very accommodating. The narrow path is not. It's my life. I'll live it however I want. What that's really implying, if you just back up and say, what's motivating these statements? Here's someone who's saying, I don't want someone else, God himself, if he exists. I don't want God himself telling me what to do or how to live or what to believe. I am my own person. I'm responsible for myself. Someone says, are you willing to live with the consequences of that? Most people will say,
yes.
Because they don't know what the consequences of that are. They don't understand the consequences, or they just don't care that there are consequences. If they're happy now, that's all that matters. For the moment, right? I'm trying to, when we go through this, trying to highlight or really accurately reflect what we're facing here as Christians. Not only ourselves, what we face personally, but also what we're facing when we try to share the gospel. Because you're going to run into this stuff quite a bit. And you want to know, what can Here's someone who says, I know in my heart that I'm right, no matter what anyone says.
How hard is it to teach people like this? Really hard. Why is that?
Their conviction is so strong that they know that their, what they're doing is the way it should be done, and just not what anybody else does.
Okay. They've made up their mind. That's just not the word they're going to believe here. And if you know it in your heart, then just think about this. I say, I know in my heart I'm right. And where another familiar one is, God knows my heart, therefore I'm right. What's the problem with that? What's the fallacy behind that? There's several, actually. Yeah, there's an opinion, okay, that you think that opinions equate to God's truth. If I have a good opinion of myself, therefore God's truth will support me, exonerate me, and save me, actually. And that's a fallacy because God doesn't say that. Jesus doesn't say that. There's nothing in the Bible to support that. So it's just somebody's opinion about themselves. In fact, curiously, if you look at Luke chapter 16 for just a moment here, Jesus is talking to some Pharisees. And what's interesting about what he says here in Luke 16, verse 15, he says, you are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. What is amazing about that? He just used the very phrase that a lot of people are using to defend themselves with, because it doesn't work. God knows your hearts. Someone says, God knows my heart. I know what I believe. I have an opinion of myself, and God himself isn't going to change that. He knows who I am, and I've got a conviction, and I'm going to passionately defend it, and that makes me right. If we lived in a world that was free from truth, free from absolutes, free from any kind of, say, divine revelation that would say otherwise, if we lived in a world that was free of all that, then that would fly. That would work. But we don't live in that world. That world can't exist, doesn't exist, and cannot be supported or proven. Someone says, as long as a person is sincere in what he believes, then God will accept him. Wide path or narrow path? This is wide path, but why?
Because God already told us what he accepts.
Okay.
You can be as sincere as you want, but if you're not following what God says, it doesn't matter.
All right. So can a person be sincerely wrong? Think about it. So someone says, this is what I believe and I'm extremely sincere. My response to them, I'm not doubting your sincerity. I'm not here to judge your sincerity. That's not the issue. What I'm here to say, though, is that you're equating sincerity with salvation. You're saying that God, all that he has said in his gospel, all that Jesus did, the blood of Christ, the plan of salvation, you know, the work of the Spirit, all that the Father has done, all of that is a moot point because as long as you're sincere, you really don't need any of that. That's what you're saying, which contradicts everything that actually has been said. So it's, once again, just your opinion. And no one is saved by opinions. Remember what I said earlier, God has no opinions. He has no opinions about you. He has no opinions about the world. He has no opinions about sin or truth or life or death or anything else. God lives and works in a world of absolutes. There are no opinions with God. I've got a whole lesson called God has no opinion of you. We could talk about that sometime. Okay, but that's an interesting road to go down, and it's extremely helpful when you're talking to people who live their life by opinions. And then recognize that those opinions really don't do anything for you. Yeah.
We have an example in the New Testament of a man who was absolutely sincere and gave an example of himself being one of the most sincere Pharisees out there. And it was proven by Christ himself to be absolutely wrong.
That's right. Luke 18, the Pharisee and the publican exchange. I think it's what you're getting at.
Yeah. That or Paul.
Yeah, or Paul himself.
Yeah.
There's a man of zeal and determination, and could Paul passionately defend his prosecution of Christians?
Absolutely.
Absolutely did. And yet, what did he say later about that? If you read 1 Timothy 1, verse 12 through 16, what Paul says later is, I acted ignorantly and in unbelief.
Of sinners I am chief.
Of sinners I am chief, exactly, he goes on to say there. But what I'm saying is that people are throwing out these opinionated defense statements
And what I'm telling you is, we're not in a court of law, and we don't have to be lawyers, but what I'm telling you is, simply put, that is just an opinion, and it doesn't, it is not substantiated by or corroborated by the facts. Let me say something very profound, and it didn't come from me, but it came from just my observation and other people's observation of God and the Bible. There is nothing, factually, that you know about God, or about sin, or about your soul, or about heaven or hell, or about the afterlife at all, or the invisible world at all, the spiritual realm. There is nothing that you know factually about any of that except for what God told you. Every single person, even atheists, when they talk about those subjects, even in their denial of them, they're citing the information that they got from God. Just think about that. So when we talk about, well, this is what I think is going to happen to me, or this is how I choose to live my life, or this is where my soul's at right now, you're talking about things you've never seen. You're talking about things you have no authority to speak upon by your own standard, by your own measure. You're just throwing out stuff. You're just doing that sort of thing. You're opinionating. That's all you're doing, because you really don't know anything about that world. God knows everything about that world, and that's why he's telling us. There's only two paths. There's a wide path that leads to destruction. There's a narrow path that leads to life. You would do well to choose the right path. Okay? Who did I skip over? Anyone?
I was just going to say, if you take a sincere person who decides in their heart that they're a bird and they can fly, and they jump off the cliff,
gravity wins.
Gravity wins. The law always wins.
Yeah. That's right. And that's a good point. That's a good illustration. All right. Many non-Christians live good, fulfilling, and productive lives. Who am I to judge them? Well, let's ask the question. Do many non-Christians live good, fulfilling, and productive lives?
Yes.
See? That's the funny thing. As soon as I pause, now you're all doubting.
Well, I think so.
I don't know. Maybe that's got a point there. Maybe he's going to say, I agree. Okay. Just trying to get you to think about that. It's good for them. That's the point I'm trying to make right there. It's good for them. So it's good on their terms. It's good as they define it. It's profitable and productive and fulfilling on their own terms. But here's the problem. Jesus isn't talking about your terms. In fact, what he's actually saying is your existence is not on your own terms. That's what he's saying. Would you agree with that? Your very existence as a living, breathing, spirit-filled person, one who has a soul, one who has a conscience, one who has consciousness, you are not able to determine your own existence by your own standard. So when someone says, yeah, I have a good, fulfilling, productive life, I go, yeah, it probably seems to be that way to you, but not to God. How can you be good without God? How can you be fulfilled without God? How can you be successful without God? And here's how we test all that. When that person dies, you can rest assured because God said so. What this person never saw coming was this thing called accountability. And when you die, then that mask, once again, gets ripped off and now you're staring at yourself, the real self, the real situation, more than you've ever done before in your whole existence. Up until that point. And now there's nothing that you can do about it. What Jesus is doing is preparing us for that, to be ready for that scenario when we die so that we don't end up in that state. But then there's this other tag part. Who am I to judge them? Who are we to judge people that feel good and fulfilled? Is that what we're doing? Is that what I'm doing? Am I judging people?
You can make an opinion. Are you judging into condemnation?
Okay, I can certainly have my opinion.
We have to make judgments. Not condemnation judgments, but judgments. We make judgments every day on everything.
That's right. So what the world says, when it says, who are you to judge, what it's saying is, who are you to condemn those people? Would you agree? And what we're saying, that we need to make judgments or decisions or exercise discernment would be another way we could express that. What we're simply saying is we have a body of evidence or an objective standard, and we're simply measuring that person to that objective standard. and recognizing that they fall short of this objective standard. Now, what's judging them is not me, it's the objective standard. Would you agree? So it's different. And what that does is takes all the weight of responsibility and all the negativity off of you and just simply says, look, you can live life however you want. I tell people that. You can live life however you want. I'm not going to stand in your way. Do whatever you want to do. But here's the standard of good living. As God defines it. And if you want to live in such a way that opposes that standard, stands in contradiction to that standard, by all means, if that's what you choose, you have the right to do that. God gives you that right to make that decision. But he doesn't say that that is the right decision. There's a difference between having the right to make a decision and making the right decision. Those are two different things. The world throws it all together and says, who are you to judge? And isn't that an interesting thing? Because in saying that, what are they doing? They're judging you. It's called a self-refuting argument, okay? Or self-imploding argument, if you want to look at it that way. They're basically using the very same thing that they're condemning you for in order to condemn you. That's the way the world thinks. Anyway, we're not here to fix all that this morning. We're just here to observe and to acknowledge that. Someone says we don't need religious doctrine. All we need to do is love and respect one another. Wide path and narrow path. Really? Why? We don't need to love and respect one another? We do need religious dogma?
It is a dogma.
Alright, see if I dig a little bit. I can get some response here. Okay. So, what I'm after here is just simply looking at this objectively as much as we can. Are we supporting religious dogma? Or is that a negative, or really some say a pejorative, that is a fancy word, kind of a purposely casting negative light upon something. You know, that all religion is dogmatic. Dogma, if you look up the definition of dogma, it has to do with facts that are purported to be truth, but are only supported by opinions. Now, based on that definition, are we believing in dogma or are we believing in truth? Here's what people are wanting to say. They're wanting to say that everything you believe, because you're Christians and you guys are all religious and you've got your head stuck in your Bibles, you can't see reality, right? I've been actually told this. In those words. So since you're like that, therefore, you know, you're dogmatic and you don't recognize the idea here that is transcendent of all that, superior to all of that dogmatic stuff that you guys believe in. It just we need to love and respect one another. What do you say about love and respect?
We do need to.
We absolutely, absolutely need to love and respect people. Okay? We need to respect them as human beings. I don't mean we need to respect what they do or what they say. We need to respect them, give them the dignity as they are living, breathing human beings made in the sight of God. You're made in His image just like you are. Let's respect that. And love, well, we're not talking about you have to like them. We're not talking about that you have to like everything they do, but we are talking about you need to operate, act in their very best interest, because you're told to do that. That is a command. You're not only to love your friends and the people that love you back, you're supposed to love your enemies and people that persecute you. The world's not being taught that by itself. We are being taught that. Actually, what I would come back and say is, actually, we are being taught to love and respect even better than you are, world. We're being taught to love and respect beyond. You're talking about transcendent? We're above you. We're above that in our thinking, that is. Because we're being taught by someone who is higher than all of us. Bringing us up to this higher level. Not because we're morally superior people. That's arrogance and smugness, right? But because we're simply putting into practice what this revealed knowledge is telling us to do. Telling us how to live. So here's how I would say that, how I would respond to that. First of all, we're not preaching religious dogma. We're trying very hard to teach the truth. But you don't need us to do that. All you need to do is just read the truth for yourself. I don't have access to God's truth any more than anyone else. Would you agree with that? So we're not trying to preach dogma or dogmatic teaching. We're trying to preach the truth. Not your truth, not your version of it, but the truth. And in that truth, we are absolutely upholding love to a higher level than anyone on earth could have known unless God had shown us through the Son. And we are absolutely respecting human life to a level, to a degree that is better than anything we could have known left to ourselves. So this argument doesn't stand. It's just, it's negative, intentionally trying to be negative about who we are and what we're teaching in order to justify someone's resistance of that teaching. That's a white hat mentality. Last point, and this is a favorite atheistic response, free-thinking people live by reason, not by religion. How would you answer that? White hat or negative? Or turn the narrow. White hat or narrow hat?
White.
Anyway, my whole point here is, are we having to choose between religion and reason?
No.
What do we call that? Not in the formal circles, that's called a false dichotomy. Otherwise known as really a, you know, an argument that, you know, just tries to put you in a certain situation, or a false dilemma, you could say it that way. Like you're having to choose a situation. There's only two options, and you guys have chosen this one, but this is the right one, and that's just not true. It's the same argument that's made when you have to choose God and the Bible or science. And it's being promoted like you have to choose between those two. And then we're put in the corner like, oh, well, we choose God, which means you don't choose science, really? I love science. God is a God of science. He's the God who created science. I'm not opposed to science. I'm not opposed to reason either. We use reason. It's just that here it is. The reasoning process that we use didn't come from ourselves. We use a reasoning process that God taught us to use, which is based upon better thinking than what we come up with ourselves, better evidence than what we can produce ourselves, a higher way of thinking, like God says himself, my ways are not your ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts, they're higher than all of that. Well, really, God? Prove it. Okay, I will. And there he goes. He proves it. He shows us. He demonstrates that. Just think about what Jesus is talking about right here. Read the Sermon on the Mount and tell me who would have come up with that left to themselves. And then who can practice that left to themselves. This is what I'm getting at here. The atheists think that it's all about reason, and reason is our source of enlightenment. And I would agree to a point that we have to be reasonable. We have to be rational. But what it is that we're being reasonable with, or the reasons themselves that we're using, that has to come from someone other than ourselves. Otherwise, it gets right back into the opinion realm. What a lot of atheists use and say is reason is really just their opinion. They just stamp reason on it and make it good. And we can't do that. I'm afraid a lot of Christians have done the same thing, you know, that they have their opinions and they stamp doctrine on it and they think that's doctrine, and that doesn't make doctrine any more than opinions make reason. I'm talking about truth, really, when I say reason. Okay? Yeah.
The problem with that statement is we're all free thinking. Because God says we may all be free thinking.
That's right.
And God doesn't ask for servants. He asks for bond servants. He wants you to bind your free thinking mind to his word.
Right.
So the beginning of the statement is totally wrong.
Well, yeah, it assumes that free thinking people don't need God, which is, again, negatively referred to as religion here, but that's the idea. You're right. All right, so are we free thinking? We're free to think. And we should be free thinking in our open-mindedness. But I want you to think about this, that what God is, if God is telling you that there is one truth, one way, one life, there is one narrow way, then he's the one who has to condition our thinking in a certain direction. So you're free to think about whatever you want to. But you're not free to save yourself or to excuse yourself by however you think. You can say it that way. Let's go on to question four in our time. Since I'm a Christian, I'm already on the narrow way. There's a statement. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes. Just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're on the narrow way.
All right. Given, taken by itself, I would not defend this as an accurate statement. By itself, if we're simply using the word Christian. And if we're using the word Christian objectively and in what all Christians should be, then yes, I would say it's an accurate statement, but that's not how it's used to use. Christian is a word that's heavily abused and diluted and misunderstood out there. Lots of people think they're Christians. Would you agree with that? Lots of people think they're Christians, and they are. And the reason they're not is not because I disagree with that or their status there. It's because they simply haven't become Christians through the method that God has told them by which we become Christians. And so what I'm looking at here is if it's just Christian, the name Christian that we're after, then the only way that we have to pursue, or the only thing we need to pursue in order to become those on the narrow way, is just to take on a certain name. And once we take on the name, then we're on the narrow way and all's good. And that's the problem I'm addressing right here. We can't just go by names alone. What we need to do is define what those names mean, understand the implications of that definition, and how that impacts us. If you're a Christian, if you say you're a Christian this morning, and I assume a bunch of us are, if not most, or even all of us, if we are Christians here this morning, then that has to mean something. We can't just use the name. Someone says, well, I was baptized into Christ. Well, there you go again. You just talked now about your event that made you a Christian, but that doesn't tell me who you are. That only tells me what you did. Who you are is defined by how you live and how you think and how you really are, who you really are, not just by what you did or what name you take for yourself. Listen to the lesson this morning. It's exactly what I'm talking about. So, and I hope it comes out, if that's all it takes, and is our objective simply to take on the name Christian and nothing more, and I think you would disagree. No, it's not that. It's not just to take on the name Christian. And if not, then are there some dangerous assumptions of one making that statement? If someone says, I'm a Christian, therefore I'm on the narrow way, are there some dangerous assumptions in that?
Once saved, always saved.
Once saved, always saved would be very applicable here. That comes right out of Calvinism, right? Which is the underpinning of several major denominations in the world today. Even most people who believe in Calvinism don't know what Calvinism is. There's that ignorance, once again, that people just don't even understand what they're believing. But the point is that we actually believe that sometimes. We use a different word than saved. We talk about once baptized, always saved. That's how we think sometimes. That's how some of us have been taught to think in the past. Once baptized, all we say. That just doesn't work. Are there terms and conditions for remaining on the narrow way? Let me ask you this. Did you agree to terms and conditions of your discipleship when you became a Christian? Did you agree to terms and conditions? Were there things that you agreed to? Not just becoming baptized, but was there a lifestyle that you agreed to? Was there a sacrifice or a sacrificial life that you agreed to? Was there a love that you agreed to, and a respect for humankind that you agreed to, and a devotion to the brotherhood that you agreed to? Or did you just agree to get baptized and that was it? Isn't that a package deal? Didn't you agree to all that? Whether you realize it or not at the time, but didn't you agree that God, whatever you say, like the Israelites, when God first gave them the law, whatever the Lord says, we will do it. Right? All that the Lord has commanded, we will do it. Even before they heard all that the Lord commanded. That's what they said. And God was okay with that if that was their heart, because he knew that whatever I command, they would do if they were sincere. So just think about that. I'm just trying to kind of stretch our mind a little bit on some of what's going on here. If God wants all men to be saved, why did he make the narrow way so narrow or so hard? Or is it God that makes it hard? Okay. Who's got an answer here?
Yeah. We make it hard.
We make it hard?
Wow. But we want our way. We're like little kids. We just want our way.
All right, so we want our way. But when we become Christians, all that goes away, right? All that dissolves. Now we don't want our way. We want always God's way. We never have an issue with anything God says. We all live in peace and harmony and brotherly love with one another from that point forward, right? So what are we saying then?
It's a choice that you have to make. When you decide and you take on all the conditions for being a Christian and following God's word, it's a lifestyle change, it's a heart change, it's a head change, it's a whatever.
Yeah. That change all happens in the water, right?
No. It takes a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work.
And even people who've been Christians for 70 years,
not just keeping ourselves, I understand the context of what you're saying, it's true, that we do have to keep ourselves, but we are keeping ourselves by availing ourselves to God's mercy and grace. It's God's grace that really keeps us on the narrow path, but we've got to make the decision. Faith is a decision-based lifestyle. So is sin, by the way. Sin is a decision, always is. Sin is a decision, faith is a decision. We have to make a decision to stay on that narrow way. God's mercy and grace provides for that through His forgiveness, through His patience, and so on. Okay? But at the same time, we've got to understand that we're still struggling. We're all a work in progress here. That doesn't mean some of us are kind of slipping off the narrow way and others are more firmly on it. You're either on the narrow way or you're not. Okay? But the point I'm trying to make here is that you've got to make an effort. You just have to continually make an effort. Because we've just admitted, when we came out of the waters of baptism, we didn't gain a whole bunch of, you know, epiphanies here and all kinds of supernatural knowledge that just, you know, suddenly infused into our brain because we got baptized. And someone has rightly said that when we baptize people, we baptize all their baggage too. And we have to get rid of that little by little. I think all of us are evidence of that. Did you have someone have a question earlier? Go ahead.
David, the man after God's own heart, shows you that when you've gone down the wrong path and somebody holds the mirror up to you, that you need His mercy and His forgiveness to get back on it. Each of those quite the example.
That's a good example. Yep.
Paul said he had to look at his body daily.
Right. That was his part. That was Paul's part in doing that. And we're talking about grace and mercy on one side. That's what God does that you can't do. We're also talking about discipline, you know, self-discipline, self-management, decision-making, responsibility. Those are things you do. Okay, let's not confuse the two or think that only one stands. It's really not the case. I have 30 seconds. Where does the wide path lead? Where does the narrow path lead?
Okay.
Who says?
God.
So when you say this to people, the narrow path leads to life, the wide path leads to destruction, someone says, well, that's just your opinion. You say, actually, it's not. In fact, even if I didn't believe it, it would still be true. That's an interesting way of responding. Even if I myself did not have that belief, it would still be a truth because it comes from God, and He's the one who says it, and He's the one who proves it. He's the one who provides the evidence for that. I hope this class has been helpful this morning for you, just to kind of, again, maybe open up your mind to things you've thought about and maybe haven't quite clarified, or maybe you've already thought about all this and this was reviewed, that's fine. It was a good review anyway, I hope. And you profited from it. Thank you so much for your participation.